Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
Hello, everyone, from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana. This is Larry Batson, and you are listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on this magical network known as Blog Talk Radio. And we're here every Thursday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, so we hope you do include us on your weekly schedule as we're getting ready for the spring-like season, as we've enjoyed way too much rain here in the Midwest. But all we can say, summer's on its way, and we're very excited about that. We want to tell everyone handling the technical responsibilities tonight from the state of Pennsylvania, it's nice to have on board Eric Altman. He's subbing for Melissa Hovey and Wayne Larson, who are on sabbatical, a little short vacation. They'll be back with us next week, but we're in the very, very capable hands of Eric Altman. We do appreciate his efforts and work. We also want to thank Jim Johnson for providing the music for us, and always appreciate the work that he does. And from his massive Wild World News studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, the Honorable Distinguished Dr. Henry Day. Good evening, Doctor.
Well, good evening, Mr. Batson. It stopped raining for a minute.
You know, it stopped raining, excuse me, and I have to tell everyone that yesterday was a ritual that we do every spring. It's the release of the alligators from their inside facility to their outside pond, and I think every one of those gators is mad at me because it was 40 degrees last night.
How many alligators do you have now?
Oh, well, we have seven big ones, but, you know, they were so anxious to get outside, and we've had some pretty nice weather, and the smell of spring was in the air, and they all congregated by their door to make that pilgrimage, as they do every spring, and they come out, and it was cold, and it was cold here all day today, and just kind of yuck. But we know spring and summer is just around the corner.
Have the tadpoles hatched in the gator pond?
Yes, and they're all running for their life at this point.
I bet they are.
So it's a regular ecological system, an eco wild world. How appropriate! And only the frogs were in shock when they saw. I felt so bad. I mean, I just felt so bad, but, you know, what can you do? You know, it's all part of the, you know what I did one year, Dr. Day, is I collected all the tadpoles, and there was probably close to 10,000 in that pond, and
my.
I released them down into the creek, and the species of frog that lays these eggs and become these tadpoles are wood frogs, and I didn't get a chance to do that this year, and I feel kind of bad, so maybe some of them will survive. You know, they're so little, I don't even think the gators even see them. You know, 7-8 foot alligators, they don't even notice them. So it's like, you know, what can you say? The following portion of Larry Batson's Wild World is brought to you by Alphabet Swamp, the new children's book by Cheryl and Larry Batson, yours truly. Order your autographed copy today at www.larrytheanimalguy.com. Or, hey, send check or money order for $10 per copy to WES 4140 North 600 West, Greencastle, Indiana, 46135. Shipping and handling is included.
It's now time from his broadcasting mecca in Indianapolis, Indiana, the distinguished Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News.
Good evening to all our listeners around the world. This is Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News. Now, Mr. Batson, have you ever had the desire to hug an armadillo?
Well, you know, on a dark, lonely night, yes, I have.
Well, don't.
Okay.
Can't link armadillos to the spread of leprosy.
Uh-oh.
Now, listen to this. With some genetic sleuthing, scientists have found a likely culprit in the spread of leprosy in the southern United States. and that would be the nine-banded armadillo.
Mm.
Now, DNA tests show that a match in the leprosy strain between some patients and these prehistoric-looking creatures. And it's a connection that scientists have suspected for a long time, but they couldn't pin down until now. Well, they finally figured it out. Now, only about 150 leprosy cases occur every year in the United States, and most of them come from people who travel to such places as India, Brazil, and Angola, where it's much more common. So no hugging the armadillos anymore.
My hand's up.
Okay, Mr. Batson.
Have you ever tried to touch an armadillo?
Well, I have, but I'm kind of special.
Well, they only run about a million miles an hour. I mean, I don't think the children should stay indoors because the armadillos are outdoors. So people should not be concerned.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
All right, now here's something that needs to be done all across America's coastlines. We're heading off to San Diego, California. SeaWorld says it is going to stop using plastic bags at its San Diego theme park's gift shops on June 18th to cut plastic pollution in the ocean. Paper and reusable sacks will be offered instead. Now, the ban coincides with the opening of the park's Turtle Reef attraction. Now, the plastic bags can be a major problem for some types of sea turtles that mistake them for what?
Jellyfish?
That is correct.
Oh, my.
Yeah, the way the bags have a tendency to float in the water, they kind of fill up, and with the current of the ocean, they kind of move along like jellyfish, and fortunately, the sea turtles think they're food, and that's not a good thing.
That's not a good thing. You know, plastic products have created a lot of different problems for the natural world over the years, so plastic bags is just part of it.
I want to see it from coast to coast.
Yes,
no,
we do.
Plastic bags.
Yes.
All right, now, here's something. I saw my first mosquito today, and why is that important?
Well, because of the importance that the mosquito is to the natural world, and also because mosquitoes do carry some diseases.
That's right. Well, for over a year now, we've been reporting on the white nose syndrome.
Yes.
That infects the little bats.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, here's something that needs to be done. You need to listen all across the United States. And Waterbury, Vermont, the State Department of Fish and Wildlife, is urging homeowners to go easy on bats living in their attics or under their eaves. Now, populations of the once common little brown bat have plummeted due to the white nose syndrome. Now, biologist Scott Darling said the bats that have survived the disease are leaving their caves and mines now and migrating to their summer ranges.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these little guys, one bat can eat up to 2,000 mosquitoes in an evening.
Yes.
They pollinate flowers, and so if the little guys want to hang out around your place, I would let them. Please accept them into your home, and this year it's very important.
Well, it is, and that's going to be a hard sell because, you know, let's just face it, bats give people the creeps, and I have a fellow, in fact, he's been on this program, and I won't say who it is, but if he has one bat venture into his home, and it's happened several times, he's got me on the phone. And he will pay me whatever I want to come and catch that little bat out of his house. So, yeah. So that's going to be a hard sell. I totally agree.
So would you call him a little batty?
I'd call him a little batty. Yes, I would. Of course, my name is Batson, you know.
Well, that's true.
That's why I have a special love for the bats.
I can see that.
Yes, I do. Okay.
All right. If you're in Knoxville, Tennessee, and you see something purple hanging in a tree, it's not a fruit, so don't pick it. The agriculture officials have hung 4,500 purple traps in a 50-mile radius around Knox County to survey the emerald ash borer that has killed tens of thousands of ash trees in the eastern United States. Now, this non-native beetle lays eggs in the trees, and the larvae burrow beneath the bark. and their tunnels eventually will kill the trees.
We had some of those hanging around our area last summer. And, you know, at first I was so ignorant, I did not know what they were. So I called my friend Glenn Baker, who's a wildlife biologist, and he informed me. And I thought, wow. And then all of a sudden, and we talked about this earlier, I just realized that all those little purple bags are gone. But that's interesting. It's a big problem. It's a big, big problem.
Well, let's hope they're doing their job.
Yes.
All right, now here's some kind of sad news from Norfolk, Virginia.
Uh-oh.
Department of Game and Inland Fisheries will have to move three eaglets from their nest at the Norfolk Botanical Center to the Wildlife Center after their mother was killed by an airplane. Wildlife biologists determined that the five-week-old eaglet's father can't provide enough food for them to survive. But they're going to be taken care of, and they'll be released when they're old enough to be on their own.
God bless those people that are involved with that project. That's a lot of work. God bless them. That's fantastic.
Yep, they have to chew up a salmon and spit it into their mouths. Well, yeah, that's a lot of work.
Yeah, three or four times a day.
Yeah. All right. You want to hear an unusual way to spend Easter?
Oh, yes, we do. I did. We had Easter with the baboon.
How did she like her basket?
Well, how do I put this? It was destroyed. And she, all of her little stuffed items were basically disemboweled. And yes, it was a very violent Easter for the little baby baboon. Okay. How would you spend Easter, Dr. Day?
Well, if you're in Honolulu, Hawaii, visitors to Hilo's rainforest zoo showed up early on Easter to get a whiff of a flower.
Ooh.
That smells like rotting flesh.
Oh!
Yes. Now, Tim Menzio of the rainforest zoo says that people were waiting for her in the parking lot when she opened the gate. They were so excited about smelling this rotting flesh flower. Now, it's the flower is actually called a corpse flower, and the one that was there is 9 years old, and it was on loan.
You know, that's just something you don't want in your garden. I think they originate from Borneo or something. And imagine the event when that thing, it does that once a year, I think. Is that right? And it supposedly smells like rotting flesh. So if you've never smelled rotting flesh before, you need to go see the flower. You know.
Opportunity, right. Yeah.
There's your opportunity.
Woo!
Woo!
All right. Tulsa, Oklahoma. I taught a putty tat, a big putty tat. State wildlife officials are contacting breeders to find the origins of a female mountain lion captured in the backyard of a North Tulsa home. Now, the lion was taken to the Tulsa Zoo where it will be tested to see if she's okay. And they believe that she may have been a pet.
That's a possibility. Yes, sir. So,
well, what do you think? Is a mountain lion a good pet?
Well, really, to put the two, I should say the three words together, in my world, it just doesn't. Mountain lion and pet. It's not a pet.
I see what you're saying.
It's somebody's egotistical whim, or however you want to say it. They don't make good pets. I've worked with wild animals for close to 40 years, and there's not one wild animal that I can think of that I would consider a complete pet. You know? Yeah.
Okay, why did the alligator cross the road?
Oh, to get to the other side.
Close enough. Pine Bluff, Arkansas. The Arkansas Game and Fish Commission says a 9-foot alligator that was missing for more than a week has been returned to the Nature Center in Pine Bluff.
Oh.
Now, authorities were called when the missing alligator was trying to cross a road near Delta River's Nature Center. The wildlife biologist recaptured the gator, and it's home fine now. Everything's okay.
My hand's up. My hand's up.
Yes, Mr. Batson.
Could it have been looking for love?
That's a possibility. maybe it smelled that rotting fish flesh flower. Rotting flesh flower. And...
maybe it did. I don't
know. All right. Well, here's something to think about before you fall asleep tonight.
Okay.
A polar bear's skin is black. Its fur is not white, but is actually clear.
That's true.
Well, that's the wild world news for the night.
Well, thank you, Dr. Henry Day. As always, a wonderful job. We do appreciate the efforts that he puts into the wild world news, accumulating these news stories from around the world. We also want to tell everybody to check out my website, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com, and our brand new Facebook page, Larry the Animal Guy and Friends. You can join. It's filled with photos and information about our animal family. Also, a big thank you to Peter and Kathy Weimer, and We Want You Cottages. Visit today this fantastic resort on the banks of Chautauqua Lake, and in addition to their website, iKids Fishing, promoting getting youngsters interested in the fantastic sport of fishing. You need to check it out. It's absolutely wonderful. That website is www.wewantyou.com. Also, a big thank you to Santee Cooper Country in beautiful South Carolina. Lake Marion and Lake Moultrie, known as Santee Cooper Lakes, 171,000 acres and 450 miles of shoreline. Fantastic fishing, amazing golf. Go to their website at www.santeecoopercountry.org. Those are some of our underwriters that make it possible for Larry Batson's Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio.
My children and my wife. Thank my lucky stars to be living here today. 'Cause the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me, and I gladly stand up next to you and defend her till today, 'cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee, across the plains of Texas, from sea to shining sea, from Detroit down to Houston and New York to LA, the pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand and say, today, 'cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died.
And more important, Purple Heart recipient, all the way from his home in Indianapolis, Indiana. Mark Calvin Kitchell. Good evening, Mr. Kitchell. Well, it seems we've had a slight technical problem. Dr. Day, are you there?
No, well, I can hear you just fine. Do you want me to pick up? I'm on a cordless phone. Do you want me to pick up the landline?
No, we were just wanting to. We wanted to hear your voice. I thought we'd lost you for a moment.
No, I'm right here. I'm comfy and cozy and drink in hand.
Well, fantastic. Well, first of all, we want to thank you for being on the program. I also want to thank you for your service as a veteran, and also quite honored to talk to a Purple Heart recipient. Mark, it's a pleasure to have you on the program tonight.
Well, thanks, sir. Appreciate that.
We're going to talk about something that's kind of, here in the Midwestern part of the United States, there's it's almost a craze when we talk about the spring-like weather and the rain and the warm weather and the woods and ticks and everything involved.
We didn't have to go there, did we?
Oh, we will, we will. The collection, I call it catching the mushrooms, and as far as I'm concerned, one of the veterans of collecting mushrooms and anywhere is yourself, Mr. Kitchell. So
tell you what, I don't like to brag, but my father says I'm in the top 3 percentile of mushroom hunters living.
He does? Wow.
Well, as a matter of fact, that's a truism. Yes, sir. Quite impressed with his young son's ability. I can see him, Larry. Half the people can't.
Well, it is an art. I mean, the little guys, they stay very still. They're like little gnomes. They kind of hide in the forest, and they camouflage so easily that not unless you've really...
Oh, my God, yes. I tell you what, it's like looking for a needle in a haystack.
It is, and I have to say that it is so much fun. It is absolutely, not only do you have a chance to look for these delicious mushrooms, but also enjoy the outdoors and really get in touch with nature.
Larry, we're in a complete agreement on that, and in fact, I was hunting 7 hours today.
You were?
And found about 2.5 pounds, maybe. It's they're up. If you people would like to get out there and go looking, you need to know what you're looking for.
Well, let's start from the very beginning. Do you remember what got you fascinated? Was it your dad that got you fascinated in this?
Oh, well, Dad and Grandpa. I've been doing it for over 55 years. Ever since I was big enough, they didn't have to carry me. It was something we did on the farm in the spring to get out of grandmother's kitchen.
Yeah.
The manly men would all go mushroom hunting, and I have gone mushroom hunting with Grandma. She knew they were up for sure. We'd go out and go hunting, and it's just something I grew up with, and I've never thought twice about it. And it turned out, as my wife says, the one thing I can do better than anybody else, I can only do for a week or two out of the year. And, you know, Larry, she's got a real strong point there.
She does. So, okay, for someone that has not participated in this activity, let's start from the very beginning. What is the equipment involved? What is required for you to go out and successfully find these mushrooms? First of all, clothing, equipment, all that's involved.
Okay, I tell you what, I try to stay abreast of the times. And you say equipment involved, and I'm not endorsing any product or anything like that, but... I have found that these new high-tech fabrics are working out real good as far as being briar-proof. And I don't know if I should endorse anybody or anything, but I tried a new pair of the VersaTech pants made by a company called Rail Riders today.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thorn that got through me, they had double D's and double butts, is when it came break time and we found a good old sitting down on log,
I sat right down on a thorn bush and got poked right in the butt. And otherwise, the briars didn't get through me. You need to wear long sleeves. I know it's hot out there, but there's ticks out there, too. And I always tie a bandana around my neck. And to really be successful mushroom hunting, you need a sack. And they always say to hunt in a mesh bag so that the spores will rebroadcast out in the woods.
Explain
and
that.
And I always wear a comfortable hat. I prefer the boonie-type hat as to a baseball hat, but...
Uh-huh.
Anything that's, you know, I tie a headband, a bandana around my head to keep the sweat from coming down in my eyes because, well, I tell you what, after 7 hours hiking in the woods, you work up a pretty good sweat.
Oh, I'll bet.
And a set of rain gear also comes in handy because when the mushrooms are up, I don't care if it's raining or not, we're going.
Yes, that's right. So let's back up a couple paragraphs there on the spores. Explain to everyone about the spores and how important it is for you to, once you've caught the mushroom, to make sure that they basically replace the ones that you've collected.
Well, basically, the true mushroom hunter leaves his thumbnails to grow. So that the thumbnail is the protruding fingernail. And then you pinch the mushroom off right at the ground level. You don't want to pull it out by the roots or anything and get all that dirt in your sack. Mm-hmm. So if I'm talking about the professional hunter now.
You just
let that thumbnail grow for a while and then just pinch them off right next to the ground and put them in a mesh sack and... away you go.
And there are tiny spores, which you can never see, but that's basically, these spores make sure that there are mushrooms for years and years to come.
Yes, sir. I believe that's correct. The spores, there are things you can do to see the spore.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been experimenting with them for years and years, and I believe that's true. For years I hunted in either bread sacks or ice bags or something.
You're right.
And not realizing I wasn't respreading that spore. And times change and I learned. And so now I have mesh containers that I carry.
All right. So you're lurking through the woods.
Yes, sir.
Yes, and you look out of the corner of your eye, and there you see one of those beautiful little yellow morel mushrooms amongst the leaf litter and the briars and the logs and so forth. Once you've spotted that one, what is the next step?
Well, as Grandfather taught me, when you see that first mushroom in the woods, the first thing you do is turn around and look behind you. Very seldom do you find just one. And I'm talking about the morel, and they come in several colors. But when you find that first one, turn around and look behind you because you might have missed one.
Mm-hmm.
And very seldom do you find just one. And then just stand there and move your head in increments so that your eyes could focus. If you move your head in a turning motion, your eyes can't focus. Your head has to be still so that your eyes can focus on whatever you're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you've ever experienced that. You can try it yourself, and when you turn your head, you can see everything there is to see, but you can't focus on anything. You have to stop the movement of your head. And so when you do find that first one, then just move your head in little increments all around it, and you'll find his buddy.
Is there a certain pattern that you move once you spotted that first mushroom? I mean, there's a lot of people that are very serious about this, so I know my listeners are clinging to their computers and radios right now.
Well, of course there is. When you find that first one,
if it's in your sack in a matter of seconds, oh, you're so forlorn to be known as a quick picker.
Mm-hmm.
When you find that first one, that is your point of reference. You found it. It's not going anywhere. It'll be there. Mm-hmm. You can walk a circle around it. Oh, okay, say maybe a 6-foot circle around that one mushroom, because very seldom do they you just find one. Mm-hmm. And then walk a little bigger circle around it. And you might be able to see which way they run, because
mm-hmm.
sometimes they'll run off to the north or the south or the east or the west, or that one you found might be a part of a clump, a cluster, or I always consider if you find 100 or more, that's what they call a glory hole.
Oh, I have one of those on my
property.
That,
I tell you what, that is a wonderment to find over 100 growing in one spot.
It's. I have to confess, it's one of the most beautiful sights I've seen in nature.
Well, I tell you what, when you walk into that glory hole, holy mackerel, Andy, if you're a cigarette smoker, pull out a cigarette and see how high you can count, and then get picking. You do need a good walking stick. I recommend, I'm going to be 65 years old. And I don't move quite as good as I used to. And I want to thank you on your compliment to the decoration I received. But one thing I found in all the years of my hunting, I can go out in the spring and this time of year, and, oh, it's so beautiful out there. The birds are singing and the woodpeckers are pecking and the mushrooms are coming up. And it gives me a chance to move in the jungle like I did 40 years ago. The only thing is, I don't have to carry a gun, and nobody's shooting at me.
Well, that depends. If you're trespassing, that could be a...
Well, now, I tell you what, when that farmer walks out the back door and unloads about 5 rounds out of that shotgun or shoots about 10 rounds with a 22 over the top of your head, that means get the hell out of my woods.
Pretty much. We're talking to Mark Calvin Kitchell. We're talking mushrooms tonight, everybody. I'll tell you what, there's some fanatics out there. We're going to take a short break. Oh, this is already good. You're listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
We're Rascal Flatts. There's a place where ordinary people do extraordinary things every day. That place is called the American Red Cross. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org to learn more.
Here's a hot topic about our wildlands and living with the natural role of fire.
Yard work is not just a matter of pride when you live in the wildland-urban interface. It's also about survival. Here are some FireWise tips that can help protect your home from wildland fire. Prune your trees 6 to 10 feet above the ground. Remove dead leaves and branches and dispose of them before fire season. Water your lawn regularly and store firewood away from the house. Be prepared for a fire emergency by having a plan for your family and pets. Learn more at our website, and then sit back and enjoy. You worked for it.
This hot topic was made possible by the Teresa and H. John Hines III Foundation. Learn more about the natural role of fire, how to protect your community, and get the latest fire information. Visit the National Interagency Fire Center website at NIFC.gov. That's NIFC.gov.
This week's episode, Bobcat in the Cave.
Gosh, Johnny, playing in the cave sure is neat.
Oh, boy, a kitty cat.
Sassy, the kitty cat's yelling. What, Sassy? It's not a kitty? It's a bobcat? Speaking of cats, do you like to stress the importance of adopting cats from animal shelters? Over 5 million cats go into animal shelters every year? And with millions of healthy cats to choose from, it's a shame more people don't adopt from shelters.
It's Bobcat, Abby. Help, Sassy!
Why bother? We'll just get into more trouble tomorrow.
What's that supposed to mean? Oh, nuts.
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the forest, near the side of the road.
No need for alarm, sir. The forest is where bears live.
But this was no ordinary bear.
No ordinary bear?
Yeah, one second I'm having a smoke taken in the view. Next thing I know, I am face to face with Smokey Bear.
Let me guess, Smokey had a tip for you.
He did. He must have seen me toss my cigarette on the ground. He told me never to do that because it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
He's a smart bear. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
That's what Smokey said. I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous, and you're not.
Good point.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Welcome back to Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host, Larry Batson.
Hello, everyone. This is Larry Batson. You are listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on this magical and premium network known as Blog Talk Radio. We want to tell everyone that next week on the program, from the San Diego Zoo, Joan Embry from Johnny Carson fame. She's traveled around the world. She's going to be our guest next week. We're very, very excited. And we also want to tell everyone that you can go on the Blog Talk Radio site for Larry Batson's Wild World and download any show that we have had on. And I think now we're close to 80 programs that you can download absolutely free of charge. So we've had some great shows, and we encourage you to do that. Or tune in live every Thursday night at 10 p.m. for a live broadcast. And as I said, next week on the program, Joan Embry from the San Diego Zoo. We also want to thank RadioMom.fm and the home of the Radio Mom Shop, where you can save 50, 60, 70% on vacations, restaurants, and a variety of other goods and services. And hey, listen to my show, The 70s on Sunday, 12 to 7, each Sunday at RadioMom.fm. Also, a big thank you to McGregor Mountain Lodge in beautiful Estes Park, Colorado, on the boundaries of Rocky Mountain National Park. We call that God's country. Go to their website, info@McGregorMountainLodge.com. And also a big thank you to Tire Service Plus and owner Jerry Jones, taking care of America's auto maintenance needs. They keep our animal truck on the road, traveling thousands of miles with our wild animal ambassadors. Call them at 317-243-0700. We're very honored to have as our guest tonight. He is a veteran of the Vietnam War, Purple Heart recipient, and I'm so proud to call him a friend of mine. From his home in Indianapolis, Indiana, Mark Calvin Kitchell. Good evening, Kitch. Nice to have you on the show. We're having a blast.
Buddy, I tell you what, I really enjoyed your commercials when they had that one with the dog barking. My big German Shepherd, he's sitting right here on the bed with me. He kind of liked that one. And Joan Embry, I won't miss that show. She was, boy, you know, from the Johnny Carson show, golly, those were my younger years. And she was, you know, she's still a babe.
She is a babe. I will completely agree with you. In fact, I had a chance to see Joan about, it's been 5 years ago, I think. We were at the National Conservation Training Center doing a program together, and she still is. I'll tell you what, she just does some fantastic work in San Diego at her animal compound, so we'll talk about that next week, and we're very excited to have Miss Embry on the show, and as equally as excited to have Mr. Kitchell talking about the elusive sport of catching those runes, those mushrooms.
Well,
those,
you know, Larry,
morels.
You were asking me the equipment, and thought came to mind, and I understand that you've been around the world and back without a map or a compass, and my thought was, what are you thinking? No compass. Buddy, take a compass. I ain't lying. I carry two.
You do.
Buddy, I tell you what, I have no problem getting lost, getting unlost. Now, that can be a problem.
That can be
a
problem.
But Oh, one of the mushroom hunters' rule of thumbs are most mushroom hunters don't get an hour or a mile away from the cooler. And I think that's probably true. But
now my question.
Well, I'll tell you what, Larry.
Go ahead.
I've had three people that went mushroom hunting with me more than twice.
Yeah.
Because when I go back where no men have gone before.
Oh.
Well, you gotta, you know, they say the mom and pops, grandma and grandpa, they hunt the edges.
Yeah.
Because they're afraid of getting lost.
Yeah.
Well, I get lost all the time. You also need a good pair of hiking boots with a good tread.
Yeah.
What brand? Everybody's got their own favorites. I've tried them all. Some I like more than some others, but you need a good pair of hiking boots. The waterproof ones, that doesn't necessarily have to be Gore-Tex or whatever, but that certainly helped today because with all this rain we've been having here in Indiana, and Indiana being pretty flat, everything was pretty soggy.
Yeah.
And I came out completely unscathed. Feet were dry as a bone. And, well, you know, Larry, I like to say being an old pro, but...
Yeah.
I always have mesh containers, but I've got a belt.
Yeah.
It's got mesh bags that I put around my waist.
Mm-hmm.
So it keeps my hands free, which avoids slip, trip, and fall.
Yeah.
Because those logs are slicker than snot.
Yes, they
and
are.
And you step over a log, step on a wet log, and snap your ankle, you better have a cell phone with GPS.
Yes, you should.
Well, yeah. I mean, you get back there and, you know, well, I guess all my rules are the first rule of mushroom hunting, but another first rule of mushroom hunting is get 15 feet away from the vehicle and take a compass reading. Match it up with your watch, put 12 o'clock noon at due north.
Mm-hmm.
And then you strike, of course, if you go into the woods at 2 o'clock, you'll come out at 8. If you go into the woods at 10 o'clock, you'll come out at 4. And it helps you keep your bearings. But you got to turn the computer on because nobody walks in a straight line.
No.
If you walk due north, all you'd have to do is walk due south.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to turn the computer on and compute all the angles in your brain because when I take that compass reading, when I leave the vehicle, I don't look at the compass again until somebody says, boy, I feel like a cold beer or Coca-Cola because I carry both. And then I'll look at my compass and I get the biggest kick out of it, Larry, is, okay, point towards the truck. Or somebody says, it's going to rain, it's time to start home.
Yeah.
And I'll stand there and they'll always, well, the truck will be right over there. And usually 90% of the time I tell them, well, I'll see you. I'm going in the opposite direction. Well, then, of course, I'm in a magnetic triangle of sorts where my compass is completely out of whack. But I know how to make a compass work. And it has saved our bacon many times. So you need proper clothing, a nice hat, a walking stick helps you young bucks. You can find one out in the woods anywhere. Because sometimes you need to bend the May apples over and the weeds over and stuff like that and that sort of thing. A good pair of hiking boots, a mesh sack. I prefer Snickers, black licorice, and apples. And everybody is responsible for their own toilet paper. Otherwise, it's a buck a sheet. Sorry, it used to be a nickel, but inflation's hit us all. Well, I tell you what, Larry, it's a funny story, but so many people, if they have to go to the bathroom out in the woods, they don't say anything. And they'll walk over in a corner and, you know, do their business. and all of a sudden you can't find them. They don't tell anybody.
Yeah.
If you have to go to the bathroom, tell somebody. And if you've never gone mushroom hunting before, get somebody to go with you that knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
Or if you do go by yourself, go to somebody you trust, or usually if it's a mom and pop place, there'll be an old timer in there that can tell you what you got in your sack. Don't take home it. You find a fungus growing out in the woods, just don't take it home and eat it, because there are some deadly poisonous ones out there. There's a mushroom that will give you instant Parkinson's disease.
Wow.
And you read about that every year. They had an Indian family. I believe the mother and the daughter both died. The father was paralyzed or something, and the young man's, I don't know what was wrong with him, but they got into a mess of bad ones, and they didn't double check and didn't know, and took them home and cooked them and ate them, and now they wish they hadn't.
I had heard years ago about a gal that did something very similar. She prepared some spaghetti sauce, and she was using what she thought were safe wild mushrooms, and they weren't, and it was like, oh, it was horrible what it did to her family. I mean, it was just terrible.
Oh, God, yeah, there's, you know, and I tell you what, my grandfather and my father as well, started out Grandpa maliciously. He taught me all the good ones and all the bad ones, and he made a point of it. And, you know, being a young buck and everything, I just, you know, Grampy's word was law, and he, you know, he'd explain things to you and everything. And, it's not an off-color story, but there's a mushroom out there. It's solid black, and they say anything in nature that is of a distinctive color, that's a nature's warning sign.
Right.
And this one, they call it a widow maker. I don't know what the Genesis name for it is, but it's solid black, and it looks like a teacup.
Huh.
And it's got a stem just as thin as a pencil, and it is just deadly poisonous. And Grandpa found one of those, and he picked it, and he showed it to me, and he had me smell it, and then he crumbled it all up and everything, and he said, don't ever touch one of those. Don't ever pick one of those. They're deadly poisonous. That's why they call them widow makers. And I couldn't have been but, 8, 9, or 10 years old, and Grandpa crumbled that poisonous mushroom up, and he said, now pee on my hands. I said, okay, Gramps, you know, and I pulled my little tallywhacker out, and I peed on Grampy's hands, and he shook them off, wiped them off on his bib overalls, and I learned about poisonous mushrooms.
Oh, boy, what a teaching tool.
I did a big mess of mushrooms. That made you got to sit at the grown-ups table then if you found them.
Oh, my Lord. So if you're hiking through, let's say, area that you've never been before, is there a particular, I don't know, you know, you always hear about a dying elm tree or, you know, everybody
sure,
has a
sure,
theory.
That's your, I was out for 7 hours today. You need to really be good at it. And like I said, Dad says I'm in the top 3 percentile. I was in 4-H, and I know my trees.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and your wild cherry, your hickory, your walnut, the fruit that they bear puts an acidity in the ground, and you usually don't have much luck under nut bearing trees or fruit bearing trees, with the exception of an apple tree. You see an old Johnny Appleseed, old apple tree, you'll find the nice grays underneath them. Now, I looked under 2 or 3 apple trees today, didn't have any luck. But your elms, there's live elms, there's elms, dead elms with the bark on off of them. There's dead elms with the bark half on and half off. And when you find that first one, look around and look and see what tree it's under. And it, you know, that's why I say you really need to go with somebody that knows what they're doing, because not only can they teach you mushroom hunting, they can teach you forestry, compass reading, you know, how to pack your kit. There's things you need out in the woods. Water, candy bars, apples, toilet paper, or whatever your preference is.
Yes, yes. So I've always heard, too, that the time to start looking is when the red buds bloom, you see a bee, you see a butterfly, and you see a snake.
That's true. You must have been talking to Grandpa. Grandpa always said you won't get to the good mushroom hunting until you see a butterfly, a bumblebee, and a snake. So far, I've seen the bumblebee, I've seen the butterfly, but I haven't seen the snake. So the good hunting is yet to come. Today, we found the, some people say the name for them is the woods mushroom. Some people call them spikes. We found a bunch of those today.
Mm-hmm.
And then we found, probably two dozen morels. But the morels were only one or two at a time.
Hmm.
So it's still early. And they were the gray morels,
yeah,
which usually your spikes come a week early. Then you get the grays. Then you get the yellows.
Mm-hmm.
And the yellows are the primo ballerinas. And there's also black ones that are, well, you've got the black one that's deadly poisonous, but you've also got the black morel that is very delicious. And unless you have somebody to tell you the difference, you could get tricked.
Yes.
And so we've got another week or 10 days yet of good hunting coming up.
Well, I have to confess, I went out the other day, and Mark, I found just a smattering of smaller gray and yellow morels. No giant ones. None. You know, they call them the beer can.
No, well, the weather's been holding the size back.
Yeah.
We've been having the warm nights, and we've got plenty of rain, but we haven't had the 80-degree temperature. If it had get up to 80 for a couple of days, those big ones would be popping. I guarantee you that.
Well, I was so anxious because, you know, you get ready. And then really it's kind of a slow season this year.
It's a little bit later. Last year it was early, but this year is about on par with what you'd expect.
And once the season ends here, you head north, don't you?
Oh, yes, sir. I usually start down around Evansville.
Mm-hmm.
I have to go to the Lyme disease doctor down there. Being a woodsman, I got bit by a deer tick and contracted Lyme disease 20 years ago, and I've been fighting that ever since, but it doesn't slow me down. And then I work my way all the way up to Upper Michigan. If I have to go to the UP, I've gone up there. I stretch my mushroom season out to 6 weeks.
Wow.
You know, we've got, in fact, I called the people I stay with up there, and, come on up, you know, and we've been staying with the same family for going on 30 years now, but, you know, we don't intrude. We stay in their garage, and it becomes mushroom headquarters, and the little town they live in is population 50, and it's like old home week up there, and anybody that wants to have a good time or a mushroom dinner, they swing by the garage, and we do all our cooking out in the garage, and we eat good.
I'll bet. You have a tip for everyone. Now, in fact, you told me about this years ago on how to freeze the mushrooms and enjoy them later after the season is over.
Oh, my God, yes, Larry. I tell you what, I have a recipe for all those listeners out there. Aunt Esther told me this recipe, 10, 15 years ago, but there's a catch to it. I've tried to preserve them. I still dry some, right? But I have tried to preserve them and freeze them, and everything, and I've even taken the old milk jugs we used to get that were in the paraffin box container and fill it clear up with mushrooms and fill it up with water and freeze a whole block of them. And they always came out tasting like Wang leather or rubber bands.
Yeah.
And Aunt Esther gave me this recipe for preserving them, putting them by. That's the closest thing to same day eating that you'll ever find. The catch is, I'll tell you,
okay,
it's going to cost you a beer.
Okay.
And I bought Uncle Rex and Aunt Esther, they were drinking a pitcher of beer, and I thought, why, heck yes, get them another pitcher of beer. And she told me that recipe, and Grandpa couldn't even tell the difference between mushrooms I found yesterday and mushrooms that had been in the freezer for a year.
Wow. So what's the secret?
Yep. Well, Larry, I tell you what. It's going to cost you a beer, but you're
okay.
good for it, so I'll go ahead and tell you. You got to cook them sooner or later. Now, my wife, she likes them dipped in a little egg milk batter, shaken in flour, and knock as much as the flour off, and then fry them in, at least a quarter inch of canola oil with a healthy pat of butter in it.
Yeah.
Some people like their bacon crispy. Some people like their bacon chewy. It's the same with mushrooms. I like to fry them to a golden brown on both sides. Then you freeze them on a cookie sheet, and it only takes 10-15 minutes till they're froze. Put them in a Ziploc bag, put them in the freezer. Come Thanksgiving or Christmas or whenever, and you want some, preheat your oven to 500 degrees. Put them on a cookie sheet. Sunny side up or upside sunny, doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
But if you put them all the same way, it's easier to keep track of them for 5 minutes. And then flip them. And then 3 minutes after you flip them. But you got to keep your eye on them because the little ones will get done sooner than the big ones. And you can't tell the difference between the ones you froze a year ago and the ones you found yesterday. It's the best recipe I've ever had, and it's the only way. Well, I still dry some for my soups and chili and beans and stuff like that. But as far as preserving them, that's the only way to go.
So have you ever kept track of how many pounds of mushrooms that you've collected over a season?
Oh, sure, many times.
What's
In
the most?
In fact, I'm wearing a 22-carat gold bracelet right now. I traded a jeweler for 21 pounds of frozen mushrooms that were already cooked. All you had to do was reheat them.
Oh, man.
And, we had a good year, and I put up 22 pounds, and I saved 1 pound back for myself, but it's just a damn fine bracelet, Larry.
I'll bet. Well, I think the prices this year here in Indiana in the west central part of the state are anywhere from $40 to $50 a pound for the Morel mushrooms.
Yes, sir. At Kincaid's Meat Market here in Indianapolis on North Illinois, $50 a pound.
That's amazing.
And I probably got, I probably found $125 worth today, and then I got probably another $50 worth already in the refrigerator. But, you know, Larry, I've never bought one. I've never sold one, so I'm still an amateur. But I've traded them for damn near anything you can imagine.
I have done the same. I can take a bag of mushrooms into Greencastle, Indiana, and trade it for an oil change and a lube job in moments. I mean, it takes me 5 minutes to negotiate that deal.
Betty, I tell you what, you could carry a bag of dead sack full of mushrooms into the tavern and anybody give me $20 for this? Okay, I got 20. Do I hear 25? But that $50 a pound, that scared me. I might become a professional.
Well, I'll tell you what. Mark, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on the program. This hour has flown by. I cannot believe it's almost
over. Buddy, it has. Time is, I'm not even started yet.
I know. So what we need to do is we need to have you back on. And maybe get an update later on as you on your escapades and your adventures up into Michigan. I know that we'll have lots of
emails. Oh, my God. That would be, I don't know if we can get that by the censor or not.
Oh, no, absolutely we can. So it's been an absolute pleasure. And as I said earlier, it's such an honor to know you, a Purple Heart veteran, as far as the other folks. And, of course, our Dr. Henry Day is also a veteran, so we all want to thank him as well. Fantastic show tonight, Dr. Day.
I'm hungry now. I'm going to
have to. Well, I tell you what, Larry, anytime you'd like to have me on, you know, I was thinking that, you know, your wife and I have been friends for 30 years, and you and I have been friends for 25 years, and let's keep up the good work. I think things are working out real good, and anything I can do to help you out, anytime you'd like to go mushrooming, let me know, because I got territory all the way from Evansville to Canada.
Dr. Day said he's hungry now. Is that true, Dr. Day?
Yeah. I have to find something to eat now. Thanks, Mark.
Yes, it was that.
Well, I'll just fix you up a mushroom sandwich.
There you go.
Please.
We want to tell everybody that next week on the program will be Joan Embry from the San Diego Zoo. Wonderful show tonight with Mark Calvin Kitchell. Have a great week, everybody. This is Larry Batson, and you've been listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. Good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. Be sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Larry Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.